in the limelight.
From 1965 to 1973, the U.S. military dropped 2.8 million tons of bombs on more than 100,000 targets, along with 19 million gallons of herbicide in Vietnam. The result was some 3.8 million Vietnamese killed, 9,000 out of 15,000 villages in South Vietnam leveled, and unexploded ordnance scattered about in the country. How could any rational being categorize such wanton and senseless destruction as being a problem of presentation? And yes, some 58,000 American invaders were killed as well by Vietnamese forces that were courageously defending their homeland, their families and their country, a number which is a little less than the number of American deaths due to the current coronavirus pandemic. We're prepared for you an interesting article written by Yoram Abdullah-Weiler, a former engineer who has turned into a political critic and has written dozens of articles on Islam, social justice, economics and politics, focusing mainly on West Asia and US policies. The piece is titled Vietnam War, the US Still Hasn't Learned Its Lessons. Please stay with us for more of Yoram Abdullah-Weiler's article. The 30th of April 2020 marked the 45th anniversary of the fall of Saigon and ignominious end of the war in Vietnam waged by the United States. The twofold lesson from that imperialistic escapade should have been first, respect other nations' sovereignty, and second, never ever wage war against popular movements. Unfortunately, Washington has not only failed to learn from its murderous mistakes, but also continues to support other would-be hegemons in their unwinnable wars against people's uprisings, as is the case with Saudi Arabia in its brutal war on Yemen. 30th of April 1975 saw the United States under the leadership of Gerald Ford, who had ascended to the presidency after Richard Nixon resigned in disgrace over the Watergate scandal during the previous August. The world was different then. The former Soviet Union always framed as a menace by US war planners, and whilst actually involved in a perpetual game of catch-up with the Pentagon, the nation was at least a counterweight against the American imperial juggernaut. For all his manifold sins, Richard Nixon was responsible for the Strategic Arms Limitation Talks, or SALT agreement, signed in May of 1972, restoring warmer relations with China, which led to Soviet acceptance of détente, negotiating the Paris Peace Accords in 1973, ending the decades-long US war in Vietnam. President Gerald Ford felt obligated to continue the policies initiated by his predecessor Richard Nixon, whom he pardoned in September of 1974. But having no experience in foreign policy, he depended upon guidance from his chief of staff, none other than Donald Rumsfeld, whose deputies at the time were Dick Cheney and Frank Carlucci, all of whom were paranoid over any possible reduction in military spending or arms agreements with Russia. Meanwhile, the U.S.-supported forces of South Vietnam began to crumble before the Vietnamese communist resistance, so South Vietnamese President Nguyen Van Thieu called upon the inexperienced president to immediately dispatch U.S. military forces to prop up his regime, as Richard Nixon has promised in a secret letter. the warmongers led by Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney were eager and ready to renew combat operations in Vietnam, but the US Congress refused to fund their imperial adventure. As a result, Saigon fell, not with a great battle, but with a whimper when the North Vietnamese forces seized the city on 30th of April 1975. 2 weeks earlier, having witnessed the collapse of the Thieu regime in South Vietnam, President Gerald Ford had said, "I'm absolutely convinced that if Congress made $722 million in military assistance available by the time I asked, or sometime shortly thereafter, the South Vietnamese could stabilize the military situation in Vietnam today." The Secretary of Defense at the time, James Schlesinger, disenchanted by the US defeat, conceded that he felt the world no longer regarded American military power as awesome. But rather than concluding that the United States should curtail its imperialistic ambitions and allow the people of other countries to determine their own fate and their form of government, America's hawkish leaders concluded that global dominance by military force was not the problem. It was just the way such jingoistic national behavior was presented to the world. New York Times international correspondent C.L. Sulzberger summarized this ill-conceived conclusion, pointing out, "There must be something seriously wrong with the way we Americans present ourselves these days." From 1965 to 1973, the U.S. military dropped 2.8 million tons of bombs on more than 100,000 targets, along with 19 million gallons of herbicide in Vietnam. The result was some 3.8 million Vietnamese killed, 9,000 out of 15,000 villages in South Vietnam leveled, and unexploded ordnance strewn throughout the country. How could any rational being categorize such wanton and senseless destruction as being a problem of presentation? And yes, some 58,000 American invaders were killed as well by Vietnamese forces that were courageously defending their homelands, their families and their country, a number which is a little less than the number of American deaths due to the current coronavirus pandemic. A mere 2 years after the American campaign of mass destruction in Vietnam, the American container ship, the SS Mayaguez, which was owned by Sea Land and under contract to the US Navy, ventured too close to the Cambodian island of Koh Tang and was detained by naval forces of the Khmer Rouge. According to accounts, the sailors under Mayaguez were well treated by the Cambodians. A crew member reported that they were greeted courteously with a handshake by a man who spoke English and given food and sleeping accommodation. President Gerald Ford seized upon the incident, which he referred to as an act of piracy. Bypassing U.S. Congress at the behest of Donald Rumsfeld, President Gerald Ford ordered U.S. planes to bomb Cambodian ships, striking the boat upon which the 38 Mayaguez sailors were being ferried to Tang Island. After the sailors were released 2 days later, President Ford ordered a marine invasion of the island, which led to around 66 American casualties as a result of Cambodian resistance, plus 23 others who died in a helicopter crash before arriving to the combat zone. Predictably, mainstream columnists cheered President Ford's efforts for successfully defending the U.S. against charges of being a paper tiger. Equally unsurprising was the fact that the U.S. representative and senators, who had been critical of the war in Vietnam, came together in a bipartisan show of support, stating, "Let no nation read the events in Indochina as the failure of the American will." Donald Rumsfeld, Dick Cheney, Frank Carlucci, and a cabal of belligerent compatriots took the U.S. defeat in Vietnam personally and vowed revenge. However, They would have to wait until they took full control of the U.S. war machine under the administration of the next Republican president, George W. Bush, to fulfill their fanatical fantasies. Author James Carroll observed, "What they all had in common was a hunger for the martial dominance that was born of the failure of Vietnam. It was not until 2003 that these ruthless rogues, along with Richard Perle and Paul Wolfowitz, managed to fulfill their sinister aspirations to re-establish the awesome regard for U.S. military might by means of a shock and awe, preemptive invasion and destruction of Iraq." In 1990, the US still suffered from the Vietnam syndrome, but former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein provided an opportunity for President George H.W. Bush to find a cure. On 2nd of August 1990, the Iraqi dictator invaded Kuwait, causing the nervous Saudi royals to ask for military assistance from Washington. Interestingly, Osama bin Laden advised Saudi King Fahd not to allow American soldiers in the country, offering instead to defend the country with his battle-hardened Afghan fighters, but King Fahd declined. This incident initiated a chain of events that led to the suspicious 11th of September 2001 terror attacks on New York, World Trade Center, and the Pentagon. With Saudi blessing, George H.W. Bush amassed over 500,000 American troops in Saudi Arabia, beginning 6 weeks of aerial bombardment on Iraq on 17th of January 1991. The ground invasion began on 24th of February 1991, and within 4 days a ceasefire agreement was signed at Safwan. An exuberant Bush proclaimed, "The ghosts of Vietnam have been laid to rest beneath the sands of the Arabian desert." The Persian Gulf War, claiming only 158 US deaths and less than 2 months in duration, was heralded as a stunning martial success. Bush exulted, "By God, we've kicked the Vietnam syndrome once and for all." The suspicious 9/11 attacks gave America an excuse to test the veracity of Bush's declaration. On 7th of October 2001, the US attacked Afghanistan and quickly toppled the Taliban regime, but soon began to see the ghosts of Vietnam resurrect themselves. The sought-after decisive victory vanished when, after being pinned down in the caves at Tora Bora, Osama bin Laden and supporters eluded US occupation forces and managed to escape. It is ironic that the United States is still mired in Afghanistan some 17 years later, especially since Washington backed the Afghan fighters in the 1980s to give the former Soviet Union its own Vietnam. Apparently, the United States has not yet learned the lessons it should have learned nearly half a century ago when Saigon fell on 30th of April 1975. As if all this imperial idiocy was not enough, the US president has now instructed the United States Navy to shoot down and destroy any and all Iranian gunboats if they harass US ships at sea. Hyperhawk John Bolton even claimed, "The repeated dangerous and provocative behavior by Iran's navy against U.S. ships in the Persian Gulf is unacceptable. Never mind that the U.S. ships are engaging in provocative maneuvers in the Persian Gulf, some 7,000 miles away from U.S. shores, close to the Iranian territorial waters. Can anyone imagine what would happen if an Iranian flotilla would attempt to engage in military exercise in the Gulf of Mexico?"